Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the future of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is now in the hands of a Trump-appointed federal judge to decide whether Leandra English, who was appointed acting director by outgoing director of the CFPB, Richard Cordray, is in charge, or Mick Mulvaney, who Trump has appointed as acting director. Kimberly Whaley, a professor of law at the University of Baltimore School of Law and a former federal prosecutor, joins us to discuss her concern that Trump is constitutionally out of line and in creating this showdown between two branches of government, a major battle over the separation of powers is shaping up. And if Mulvaney is allowed to be seated by the judge as the head of the CFPB, it would give the president new powers to pick and choose which federal law Trump wants to comply with. Then we'll look into Trump's latest attack on CNN, calling CNN International fake news, and what consequences this could have for foreign correspondents abroad covering the news in countries run by despots and criminals who are now calling criticism of their corrupt and brutal regimes fake news. Dan Cassino, a professor of political science at Fairleigh Dickinson University and author of Fox News and American Politics, How One Channel Shapes American Politics and Society, joins us to discuss Trump's tweet that Fox News, quote, is much more important in the United States than CNN, which he claims represents our country to the world very poorly. Then finally, we'll speak with David Neiwirth, an award-winning journalist, author, and expert on American right-wing extremism, about his new book, Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. He joins us to discuss accusations against the New York Times for normalizing a suburban neo-Nazi they profiled and whether the issue is not so much right-wing extremists centering the mainstream as America itself being in the process of mainstreaming extremism. And joining us now is Kimberly Whaley, who is an author, lawyer, and professor of law at the University of Baltimore School of Law, a former assistant United States attorney. She was the associate independent counsel in the Whitewater investigation, and she is the author of the forthcoming book, The Outsourced Constitution, How Public Power in Private Hands Erodes Democracy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kimberly Whaley.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. And just to sort of go through this dispute or this standoff between two acting heads of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, on Sunday night, the person appointed by the outgoing director, Ms. English, she asked the court to provide an emergency restraining order to block Mr. Trump's appointment of Mick Mulvaney. But then Tuesday, Judge Timothy Kelly of the Federal District Court in Washington said that Mick Mulvaney, Trump's pick, and the current director of the White House Office of Management and Budget could lead the bureau. But that's not the end of it, is it?
No, actually, I've been trying to get a hold of the decision, but haven't been unable to. But basically, his ruling was on a temporary restraining order, which is extreme relief. So essentially, what he did was leave the status quo in place, which would be, I guess, the president's pick at this point. Like I said, I haven't read the decision to determine whether he made any rulings specifically on which party should be the one that's actually presiding over the bureau. He did, my understanding is, say that there are deep separation of powers issues here, and in that regard, I think he was spot on.
So will this then go to the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit and possibly the Supreme Court?
Yeah, my understanding, I mean, that really depends on whether Ms. English's counsel decides to do it. The next step would be to actually go through a regular civil proceeding. That is not a temporary emergency order, but one where you actually brief everything very thoroughly and get a decision on whether there should be a permanent injunction, meaning a permanent ban on Mr. Mulvaney being at the Bureau. And based on that decision, it would go potentially to the D.C. Circuit and then up to the Supreme Court. But that, of course, depends on the appetite for Ms. English to push this and, the belief that this has sufficiently broader implications to continue the fight.
Well, she's not alone, though, is she? Barney Frank and others have also joined her. And my understanding is that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was set up in such a way that it was independent of the executive branch. And also, it was not funded through Congress. It was funded through the Federal Reserve. So aren't there some bigger issues at stake here?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are a number of big issues at stake. One is, as you mentioned, there's a long history of independent agencies starting in the early 30s where Congress decided, I mean, Congress creates federal agencies, and Congress decided, listen, we don't want these agencies politicized. We want them to be experts. So we're going to limit the ability of the president to fire them for any reason, to fire them at will. And the Supreme Court, in a series of decisions, held that that's constitutional. So that is, there's a lot of precedent for that being just fine. The piece here that I think creates potential additional separation of powers conflict is that we have, I think, a pretty clear statute creating this Consumer Finance Protection, Financial Protection Bureau, in which Congress made pretty clear that in this context, when the director is unavailable, the assistant becomes the acting director. And that's probably for two reasons. I haven't read the legislative history yet, but one being that they wanted someone with experience in this area and not a political appointee. And second, because that would be someone that would have been chosen by the Senate-confirmed prior director. So it would, again, limit the president's ability to politicize the position. And what the president did here is kind of took a earlier statute relating to vacancies and said, you know what, I'm going to use this one instead and give myself the power. And I think that's problematic in potentially enhancing presidential power to allow a president to pick and choose which statute he believes binds him. I think it's not a Trump issue. That is something that just potentially aggrandizes the president's power for future generations.
Well, I understand that the executive branch is going to be arguing that the CFPB violates the unitary executive principle. In other words, Congress has insulated the agency too much from presidential control and budgets and procedures, etc. And in doing so, that violates the separation of powers. That seems like an odd argument. Do you think that will fly?
I don't, because a similar argument was made in the wake of the financial meltdowns involving Enron, and the agency, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, was created. And that very argument was made that, you know, this is an individual budget, one that is not tied to Congress, one that's based on fees that the agency charges, makes the agency too insulated from the president. The court actually did find that statute constitutional, but not because of that reason, not because they're independently funded. In that instance, the appointment and removal power was given completely to the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Supreme Court said, listen, that just cuts the president totally out of the picture. Here, I mean, President Trump can appoint a replacement for Mr. Cordray. It's just that person's going to have to be confirmed by the Senate. So in having somebody that he picks in an interim basis in that position arguably is an end run around the confirmation process, and that's in place for a reason.
Well, that does seem to be the case. We're talking about next July that confirmation would be taking place. And also the judge, by the way, Judge Kelly, who's a Trump appointee, just recently appointed in September, I think he was an aide to Senator Grassley. He did ask the questions about how can Mick Mulvaney wear two hats. That wasn't answered, right?
That, again, I haven't had a chance to read the decision, I've done some research on it, and I think there are at least some legal experts that believe that in and of itself is not illegal. It might be imprudent, but I can't personally weigh in on that. I think that perhaps the bigger problem is that Mr. Mulvaney is on record as reportedly calling the CFPB a sick, sad joke. And so to the extent to which we're bypassing the process for having Congress confirm someone that's going to lead it in a manner that's consistent with the congressional intent, that's troubling, right? Because the CFPB is, as a constitutional matter, created by Congress for the purpose, in this instance, of protecting consumers. And so the public could suffer, individual consumers that have gripes against predatory lenders, banks, credit card companies. That's the jurisdiction of this agency. I mean, it's pretty user-friendly. You can just file a complaint online. And I might have mentioned $11.7 billion to date in 6 years since its inception have been given back to individual consumers. So it matters who heads this agency. And Congress set it up so that the president doesn't get to pick in the event of the actual director being unavailable. And as I can get into more detail, but I think the argument that this older statute, the Vacancies Reform Act, that controls, that's kind of problematic too, because that was actually passed in the wake of President Clinton using the interim director type position too much. Congress said, wait a minute, you can't just keep putting acting people in here and bypass the process. So we're going to pass a statute that makes the president actually put us in the loop. And so to actually allow this maneuver and on the theory that, well, the president has the power under the Vacancies Reform Act seems a little odd given the reasons for the Vacancies Reform Act, which is, listen, Congress has its constitutional prerogative for to actually confirm these people. And, you know, if you can't get them confirmed, pick someone else. But it's not, you know, up to the president to step in and just say, well, I don't really like this language, or I don't think it's the best reading of this other language kind of covers me. So I'm going to put in somebody who politically is consistent with my position. And this isn't a Republican versus a Democrat thing. I mean, I'm a law professor, and so I'm looking, you know, down the line, generation after generation. And once something's in the president's toolbox, or Congress's for that matter, it's kind of hard to dislodge it. So it's really important that every branch retain its powers so that individual liberties ultimately are protected. That's what the framers really cared about, making sure that the individual maintains its liberties and no one branch gets so powerful that they can boss everybody around and bully everyone, because then it's the individual people, the voters, that lose.
Well, what's at stake here is that the president, you know, nobody says that he can't appoint somebody, but he doesn't have the right to take over an independent agency without the advice and consent of the Senate, right? That's the precedent that worries you, right?
Correct. I mean, that is definitely the precedent. The other piece of it is kind of not really giving respect to clear language of Congress, because Congress passes statutes all the time. The president's job is to enforce them. And if what Congress does is sort of optional, that is also, I think, a problem constitutionally. So it's just the confirmation process for sure. That's number one. But number two is also this idea that if you've got clear language of a statute, we'll do some legal gymnastics, some very clever, I think, legal gymnastics to get around that. And they have a colorable argument. Obviously, they persuaded a federal district judge, so I don't want to suggest that it's an unethical, unlawful argument. But the easier path would have been just apply the language of the statute, let Ms. English carry out this vacancy. President Trump gets to make the choice as to who replaces Mr. Cordray, and we're not in this drama. We're not in court. We don't have a power struggle as to who's in charge. We're not talking about, you know, bringing donuts and all the other things that we're talking about now. And the work of government goes forward. I mean, to me, this was just a completely unnecessary legal maneuver that just hurts the populace. It hurts people who benefit from this agency working smoothly, because a major monkey wrench has been thrown in there that really wasn't necessary. You just apply the language of the CFPB Act and we're done.
Right, but what people are worried about is that this is, again, and this is not the first time in this administration, putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank, putting the Wrecking Crew in there. I mean, the thing that I find extraordinary is what could be wrong with an agency that has returned about $12 billion to about 30 million Americans? What's wrong with that?
Well, I mean, it's wrong if you're concerned about the parties that are actually returning the dollars, that is, you know, big banks and credit card companies and lenders. That they certainly don't like that. And there have been efforts in since the Republicans took over both houses of Congress to amend the Dodd-Frank Act that created the CFPB to give the president more power, and it hasn't passed. It passed in the House, but not in the Senate. So.
And they held up Cordray, by the way, for what, a year or two, didn't they?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So this is clearly a kind of a David and Goliath battle, one between, you know, big moneyed interests that make a lot of donations to political campaigns, presumably, and protecting, you know, people from being ripped off, right? when we have, you know, when we have some one particular bill from Verizon, for example, or one of our service providers, where there's an error on it or something fundamental and $2-3, you know, we might not have the time or the effort, or there's certainly the money to hire a lawyer to fix that, right? So it does matter if you can get government to walk in and say, listen, we see you're doing X to millions or thousands or millions of people. You need to stop it because it's starting to add up, and we're not going to let you take advantage of the system this way. And I think that's at least the theory behind the CFPB. But we all know that's also Elizabeth Warren's brainchild, and I don't think she and Trump have a lot of things in common at this point.
Well, Kimberly Whaley, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you. And again, I was speaking with Kimberly Whaley, who's an author, lawyer, and professor of law at the University of Baltimore School of Law, a former assistant United States attorney and associate independent counsel in the Whitewater investigation. She is the author of the forthcoming book, The Outsourced Constitution, How Public Power in Private Hands Erodes Democracy. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into how Trump's latest attacks on CNN expose foreign correspondents to even more danger.